Hey y'all, Miss H here. We're gonna finish up your senior year with a storytime meditation from the HMH book. We're gonna read a couple sections from the last chapter of a story called Annie John, which was written by Jamaica Kincaid and was published as her first novel in 1985. These two excerpts should take about 20 minutes to get through, and I'm going to ask that you find a comfortable place to sit or to lay down. Put on some headphones or just find a way to get away for a little bit. Take this time as a moment to have some quiet in your life, to quiet the noise around you, to quiet the distractions in your mind, and to quiet any of the fears or excitement that you're experiencing as we get close to the last couple weeks of your senior year of high school. Now that you're comfortable, I want to take a minute to tell you a little bit about our author, her connection to the story, and a little about the excerpts of the story that we're going to read. Jamaica Kincaid was born Elaine Potter Richardson. She was born on the Caribbean island of Antigua in 1949, but she left that island at just 17 years old to go work in New York City. After a series of jobs, she became a writer for The New Yorker, a very prestigious publication. In 1985, she published her first novel, Annie John, the last chapter of which is called A Walk to the Jetty. Like Kincaid herself, our protagonist is emotionally estranged from her mother at a young age. I want you to take some time as you listen to this story to think about the goodbyes that you will have to say over the next few months. I want you to consider the relationships that you have with the people who matter to you, people who you care about and who care about you in return, your family, your friends, your teachers. I want you to think about what the next few months of your life might look like as you go off to college, trade school, start new jobs, explore the world. I want you to take the time to replace some of the details in this story with details that are closer to your own story. And then consider how our protagonist handles these situations. Consider how you would change things. What would you do differently? But mostly, I want you to consider that you are not the only people, you are not the only person going through a roller coaster of emotions as we come to the end of your high school career. My name is Annie John. These were the first words that came into my mind as I woke up on the morning of the last day I spent in Antigua. At noon on that day, a ship, which I was to be a passenger, would sail to Barbados, and there I would board another ship, which would sail to England, where I would study to become a nurse. My name was the last thing I saw the night before, just as I was falling asleep. It was written in big black letters all over my trunk, sometimes followed by my address in Antigua, and sometimes followed by my address as it would be in England. I didn't want to go to England. I didn't want to be a nurse, but I would have chosen going off and living in a cavern and keeping house for seven unruly men rather than go on with my life as it stood now. I never wanted to lie in this bed again, my legs hanging out way past the foot of it, tossing and turning. I never wanted to lie in my bed again and hear Mr. Ephraim drive his sheep to pasture, a signal to my mother that she should get up and prepare my father's bath and my breakfast. I never wanted to lie in my bed and hear her get dressed, washing her face and brushing her teeth and gargling. I especially never wanted to lie in my bed and hear my mother gargling again. Lying there in the half dark of my room, I could see my shelf. with my books, some of them prizes I had won at school and some of them gifts from my mother, and my photographs of people I was supposed to love forever no matter what, and with my old thermos, which was given to me for my 8th birthday, and some shells I had gathered at different times at the sea. In one corner of my room stood my washstand and its beautiful basin of white enamel with blooming red hibiscus painted at the bottom and an urn that matched. In another corner were my old school shoes and my Sunday shoes. In still another corner, a bureau held my old clothes. I knew everything in this room, inside out and outside in. I had lived in this room for 13 of my 17 years, and I could still see in my mind's eye the day my father was adding it to the rest of the house. Everywhere I looked stood something that had meant a lot to me, something that had given me pleasure at some point or could remind me of a time that I was happy. But as I was laying there, my heart could have burst open with the joy at the thought of never having to see any of it again. If someone had asked me for a little summing up of my life at that moment as I lay in that bed, I would have said, "My name is Annie John. I was born on the 15th of September, 17 years ago, at Halliburton Hospital at 5 o'clock in the morning. At the time I was born, the moon was going down at one end of the sky and the sun was coming up at the other. My mother's name is Annie also. My father's name is Alexander. He is 35 years older than my mother. Two of his children are 4 and 6 years older than she is. Looking at how sickly he has become and looking at the way my mother now has to run up and down for him, gathering herbs and barks that he boils in the water, which he drinks instead of taking the medicine the doctor has ordered for him, I plan not only never to marry an old man, but certainly never to marry at all. The house we live in, my father built with his own hands. The bed I'm lying in, my father built with his own hands. If I get up and sit on the chair, it's a chair that my father built with his own hands. When my mother uses a large wooden spoon to stir porridge we sometimes eat as part of our breakfast, it will be a spoon that my father has carved with his own hands. The sheets on my bed, my mother made with her own hands. The curtains hanging at my window, my mother made with her own hands. The nightie I am wearing with scallop neck and hem sleeves, my mother made with her own hands. When I look at the things in these certain ways, I suppose I should say that the two of them made me with their own hands. For most of my life, when the three of us went anywhere together, I stood between the two of them or sat between the two of them. But then I got too big, and there I was, shoulder to shoulder with them more or less, and it became not very comfortable to walk down the street together. And so now, there they are together, and here I am, apart. I don't see them now the way that I used to, and I don't love them now the way that I used to. The bitter thing about it is they're just the same, and it's I that have changed. And so all the things that used to be and all the things I used to feel are as false as the teeth in my father's head. Why, I wonder, didn't I see the hypocrite in my mother when over the years she said that she loved me and could hardly live without me, while at the same time proposing and arranging separation after separation, including this one? This trip to England for me to learn to be a nurse, which unbeknownst to her, I have arranged to be permanent. So now I too have hypocrisy. And breasts, small ones. And hair growing in the appropriate places, and sharp eyes, and I have made a vow never to be fooled again. And now, as we arrived at the jetty, I realized that I had nothing to take my mind off of what was happening to me. My mother and my father, I was leaving them forever. My home on an island, I was leaving it forever. What to make of everything? I felt a familiar hollow space inside of me fill. I felt I was being held down against my will. I felt that I was burning up from head to toe, and I felt that someone was tearing me up into little pieces, and soon I would be able to see as all the little pieces floated away out into the current, into nothing in the deep blue sea. I didn't know whether to laugh or to cry. I could see that it would be bitter and better not to think clearly about any one thing. The launch was being made ready to take me along with the other passengers out to the ship that was anchored in the sea. My father paid our fares and we joined a line of people who were waiting to board. My mother checked my bag again and again to make sure that I had my passport, the money she had given me, and the sheet of paper placed between some pages in my Bible on which were written the names of my relatives, people I didn't even know existed, with whom I would live in England. Total strangers. Across from the jetty was a wharf, and some men were loading and unloading barges. I don't know why, but seeing this struck me so differently. And suddenly a wave and this strong feeling came over me. My heart swelled with great gladness as the words, "I shall never see this again," spilled out inside me. But then, just as quickly as those words came, my heart shriveled up and the words, "I shall never see this again," stabbed at me. I didn't know what stopped me from falling into a heap at my parents' feet. When we were all on board the launch headed out to sea, away from the jetty, the water became the customary blue and the launch left a wide path in it that looked like a road. I passed by sounds and smells that were so familiar that I had long ago stopped paying attention to them. But now, here they were, and the ever-present, "I shall never see this again," bobbed up and down inside of me. There was the sound of the seagull diving down into the water and coming up with something silverish in its mouth. There was a smell of the sea and the sight of the small pieces of rubbish floating around in it. There were boats filled with fishermen coming in early. There was the sound of their voices as they shouted greetings to each other. And there was the hot sun, the blue sea, and there was the blue sky. Not very far away was the white sand of shore with rundown houses all crowded next to each other, for in some places only the poor people live near the shore. I was seated in the launch between my parents, and when I realized that I was gripping their hands tightly, I glanced quickly to see if they were looking at me with scorn, for I felt sure that they must have known my never see this again feelings. But instead, my father kissed me on the forehead and my mother kissed me on the mouth, and they both gave over their hands to me so that I could grip them as much as I wanted. I was on the verge of feeling that it had all been a mistake. Until I remembered that I wasn't a child anymore, and that now, when I made up my mind about something, I had to see it through. And that moment, we came to the ship, and that was that. The goodbyes had to be quick, the captain said. My mother introduced herself to him and then introduced me. She told him to keep an eye on me, for I had never gone this far away from home on my own. She gave him a letter to pass on to the captain of the next ship that I would board in Barbados. They walked me to my cabin, a small space that I would share with someone else, a woman I did not know. I had never before slept in a room with someone I didn't know. My father kissed me goodbye and told me to be good and to write home often. After he said this, he looked at me and then at the floor, and he swung his left foot and looked at me again. I could see that he wanted to say something else, something he had never said to me before, but just like that, he turned and walked away. My mother said, "Well," and then she threw her arms around me. Big tears streamed down her face, and it must have been that, for I could not bear to see my mother cry, which started me crying too. She then tightened her arms around me and she held me so close that I felt like I couldn't breathe. And with that, my tears dried up and I was suddenly on my guard. "What does she want now?" I said to myself. Still holding me close to her, she said in a voice that raked across my skin, "It doesn't matter where you are or what you do. I will always be your mother, and this will always be your home." I dragged myself away from her and I backed off a little, and then I shook myself to wake myself out of this stupor. We looked at each other for a long time with smiles on our faces, but I know that the opposite of that was in my heart. As if responding to some invisible cue, we both said at the very same moment, "Well, And then my mother turned around and walked out the cabin door. I stood there for I don't know how long, until I remembered that it was customary to stand on the deck and wave to your relatives who were returning to shore. From the deck, I couldn't see my father, but I could see my mother, facing the ship, her eyes searching to pick me out. I removed from my bag a red cotton handkerchief that she had earlier given me for just this purpose, and I waved it wildly in the air. Recognizing me immediately, she waved back just as wildly, and we continued to do this until she became just a dot in the matchbox-sized launch that was swallowed up by the big blue sea. I went back to my cabin and laid down on my berth. Everything trembled as if it had a spring at its very center. I could hear the small waves lap, lap, lap around the ship. They made an unexpected sound, as if the vessel had filled with water and was being placed on its side and was now slowly emptying out. I want you to take some time to consider the things we discussed at the beginning. How can this story help you make decisions about the goodbyes that you will share over the next couple months? How will you make memories of the places and the moments that are familiar to you? How will you turn these memories into your story? Take some time now to just relax and think about the story you've just heard. Consider again the next few months of your life and the ways that you will bring those memories to life. I'll have some music playing for the next 10 minutes. Enjoy it as long as you wish. Please know that at the end of all of this, I'm not going anywhere. I'll always be here for you. I love all of you. Your stories are different. Our relationships are different. But I hope and I believe that each of you has gained some knowledge, some wisdom, and some true life application for the education that we were asked to teach you. I pray that when you look back at your time in high school, even with all the COVID and all the changes and all of the moments and memories that you've missed out on right now, I hope that you look back and you have fond memories. You learn from the moments that were hard and you embrace the growth that came from each of those things. Every single one of you has an incredible and amazing story ahead of you. Stand tall, be confident, and know that I always have your back. 10 years from now, look me up. I can't wait to hear your stories. There will be a couple more things that we're going to do in the Google Classroom, but this is the last story we're going to tell. This is the last story we're going to discuss. And this is the last part of the book that's all coming together to teach you once again that you have control over your life and that you have the opportunity to make this life amazing, to make your story something worth telling. So as you go off to college or off to jobs or trade schools, as you explore the world in front of you and choose the people that you decide to do life with, as you experience true love and heartbreak, as you choose your careers and change your mind more times than you thought you could, just know that all of those moments and all of those choices add up to be your memories, and those memories become your life story. Take some time. I'll talk to you soon. Be well. Thank you.